Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to? All on that day.
Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, brought to you by The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. I'm Chris Hayes, Washington editor of The Nation. Each week here on The Breakdown, we take your questions via Twitter at Chris L. Hayes or via email at TheBreakdown@TheNation.com. The way it works is this. You send us questions about what's perplexing you this week in Washington, and we try to break it down.
Will I run to the rock? Please hide me, I run to the rock. Please hide me, I run to the rock.
Hello, welcome back to The Breakdown, week 41, episode 41 in a collector series. The recent tax deal, which by the time you are listening to this, likely will have been passed and signed into law, although I guess it's possible it won't be, but let's assume as you listen to my voice right now, it has happened. Part of that tax cut deal, aside from the extension of the Bush tax cuts for 2 years and a new rate for the estate tax, there are a variety of what are called tax extenders and sweeteners, which were put into the bill, which got less attention, but add up to several billion dollars. And I am taking the chair's prerogative this week to ask, what exactly are these tax extenders? They don't get a ton of attention, but they always crop up. As a reporter here, you see them written about sort of at the end of these sessions, and it seems like there's something fishy going on there. And if there's one person who knows things that are fishy in the tax codes, it's my guest, David K. Johnson. He's an investigative journalist and author. He writes the monthly By the Numbers column for The Nation. He's the author of the recently published book, Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill. He's a journalistic hero of mine, and it's a pleasure to have David K. Johnson here on The Breakdown. Welcome, David.
Hi, I think I'm going to disappoint you because I have not read the bill. I can imagine what's in there, but I actually haven't read this bill because I'm on book deadline.
Yeah, I understand being on book deadline. I'm sort of on that myself. So let's just broadly talk about tax extenders. What is a tax extender?
Oh, it simply is taking some provision of the law that is going to expire and, you know, giving it some additional life. I mean, that's what this whole bill fundamentally is. And every time we get a big tax bill, it is full of what we used to call Christmas tree items, you know, little gifts to people. The big 1986 Tax Reform Act had essentially one giveaway for each member of Congress and the Senate, and then some extras for the leaders.
So those are items in the Christmas tree. Often tax extenders are a kind of composition of those. What are some examples, I mean, of the kind of thing that you would find underneath the Christmas tree?
Well, I think the most famous example of all from a long time ago was a provision that they were going to put in the technical corrections to the 86 Act that, as I recall, said no estate tax shall be owing on the estate of any person who died on a specified date in a certain county in Texas who was it worth at least $12.5 million and whose sole surviving heir was his spouse. And Barlett and Steele, the famous investigative reporting team at the Philadelphia Inquirer, got the woman who was the beneficiary on the phone, who, if I recall correctly, her mansion was across the street from one of the Bass brothers and next to another one. And she said, oh, you mean that little thing my congressman Jim Wright's doing for me? I mean, isn't that what your congressman's for?
Well, I guess that's pretty paradigmatic of what the kind of quid pro quo that can be pushed into these tax extenders. And that gets me to my next question, which is, in having these provisions which expire, they go for a limited amount of time, there seems like there's two parts of the logic to that. One is that it allows you to sort of shortchange the long-run cost when you're projecting forward, right? Because it's just a short amount of time, technically, it's being extended.
Correct.
For
it. And it will often score as zero. And sometimes we've seen things scored as raising money that it turns out actually lost money.
So what's an example of that?
Well, there's a provision still in the law, the one that motivated Joe Stack to fly his airplane into the IRS office in Austin, Texas, early this year, last year. And it's called 1706. It was put in there as a little favor by Daniel Patrick Moynihan for IBM. It was supposed to bring in about $60 million a year, $5 million a month, by making it very difficult for freelance computer programmers to work as independent contractors through job shops.
Interesting.
And basically force them to be employees. Well, it turns out independent computer programmers are more compliant than the average taxpayer. sort of not surprising when you think about the fact that these are people who deal with complex code, right. So certainly the complexities of a tax return aren't going to bother them. It didn't raise money, it lost money, and it made life difficult for people, and in the case of Stack, to the point where he flew his airplane into the building and killed people. And I wrote a column saying IBM should renounce this thing to purge itself of its role in this awful criminal act.
So that's a really tragic end to a tax extender, tax sweetener. It also seems to me like, aside from just the sort of logic of revenue projection and being able to kind of deceptively say something will cost less than it actually will, there's also a real opening for some pretty ugly institutional corruption, right? Because as a member of Congress, if you're constantly extending it, you always have this sort of Damocles you can kind of use to go and raise money from people, right?
I believe one of the reasons that we have had endless tax change since 1986 is that members of Congress have figured out two fundamental components. One is, so long as they create uncertainty, they can keep raising money, as well as for those who want to create hatred of the government, stoke that. And then secondly, they can do all these twofers, where you provide somebody with a benefit and you do it through the tax system so that you're getting this double edge to it. And I think it's become one of our worst problems. You know, the founders were very smart about taxes. They decided to make this entirely a political issue because they were very aware of how dominant parties and groups in the past had used the tax law to favor one group over another. One of the things that led to the Boston Tea Party, a tax favor, a tax exemption for the Friends of King George, combined with the imposition of a monopoly on tea in the colonies. So I think this has been one of the worst aspects of this use of the tax code as a fundraising device and then as a way to achieve a social goal while saying you were putting in place a tax favor.
I see. So that's what you mean by the double-edged sword. You can say, oh, this tax favor, which is actually the equivalent of writing a check to, you know, some enterprise, is also in line with my broad ideological vision of, say, cutting taxes. I cut taxes.
Exactly. And unfortunately, because of all this, we're not having the debate we should be having, which ought to be about what we spend our taxes on. In my column I write for Tax Notes, I have shown that you can actually have more money in your pocket by paying higher taxes. This isn't rocket science. Anything the government can buy wholesale that you have to buy retail, you can get cheaper, particularly when it's a service, like in the case I wrote about, trash collection. And instead, we have this demonizing of taxes because it turns out to be a way to get elected. And so long as you can keep people ill-informed about government and about taxes, and so long as you have places like Fox News who will just lie, I mean, they don't even attempt to give a rounded version of many issues about taxes, as I've shown in my column, then you can continue this process that's damaging the country. But boy, if you're the politician who's the beneficiary of it, it's great.
So I want to talk about this uncertainty issue, because this gets to the kind of deep and profound question here. The Wall Street Journal had a story about this latest tax cut deal, and it was highlighting what I think is a worrying trend, which is an increase in uncertainty. Now, the Wall Street Journal made, I thought, a sort of dubious case that that's why businesses aren't hiring, and there's this whole kind of mythology about uncertainty being the reason businesses aren't hiring. I think that's BS. I think it's insufficient demand. But that's another story. What does seem clear is that when you started with the Bush tax cuts, which were sunset after 10 years, surely as a counting gimmick, now we're going to extend them for another 2 years. More and more of the tax code is getting crunched into these cyclical temporary cycles so that the entirety of the tax code is now looking like the small amount of what used to be tax extenders. So that we have like the whole system coming up every 2 years. And that seems like it's going to have a truly pernicious effect.
This is an absolutely awful way to do business. But first of all, it really is important to understand the uncertainty argument is complete nonsense. American corporations are sitting on over $1.9 trillion of cash because they have no place to put it to work effectively to make a profit. I'm the board chairman of a very tiny little business, under $2 million a year of revenue, run by my sons. We would never hire anybody for a tax cut. That's crazy. In fact, most small businesses, and by that I mean up to several tens or hundreds of millions of dollars of revenue, are run with an effort to report no profits to the government as best you can do it legally. You hire people when people buy your products and services.
That's correct.
You know, I mean, in our case, we manage a hotel. And, you know, if more people come, we have to hire more maids to clean the rooms. and I would like to have 100% occupancy. The uncertainty factor is, will people have enough income to rent rooms? It's not whether I'll have to pay a few dollars more in taxes.
That's right. It's a demand side story. It's certainly not a supply side story.
That's right. We need demand side economics right now because we've had 30 years of supply side economics, and look what it's brought us. No growth in wages, enormous increases at the top, and stunning increases in government debt. And remember, this all began with Ronald Reagan saying, you know, within 3 years, I'll balance the budget and start paying off the debt. Yeah, right.
Well, and that gets us back to the question of tax reform as a broad thing that I think people are starting to turn their attention to. I mean, the tax code really does look like Swiss cheese at this point, and more holes are being bored into it every day. And now with this sort of truncated timeline where we're going to be operating in this constant temporary landscape of taxes, the impulse and incentives are always going to be to cut in the short term. So what is the solution to that?
Well, that's the subject of my column that will be up when this show airs at tax.com. We are, I believe, in the middle of a societal panic. You find these throughout history. The Greeks had one that lasted 200 years, and it gave birth to the moral basis of progressive taxation and democracy, which are intertwined and always have been. We went through one in America during the Gilded Age, and these things come to an end when suddenly there's a restoration of rational discussion. If you're in the middle of a riot, and I was in a bunch of riots as a young reporter, right in the middle of them with rocks flying and tear gas and a lot of violence, you cannot have a rational discussion with anyone. And that's what we're sort of in. We're in kind of a political riot about taxes. The purpose of taxes is to raise revenue to provide the common goods which are necessary for society, for our freedom, and most importantly, perhaps to conservatives, as a foundation of private wealth creation. But when we starve the tax system, it costs us money. And I'll give you a very good example that just came out. There's a study that's been done in Pennsylvania of what it's cost to not keep up the roads in that state. $8 billion a year. That's $1,000 a year for every resident of that state that they're paying, in effect, through lost economic activity and negative expenses like automobile accidents and getting your front end realigned every couple of months instead of never. So we need to get away from this riot. And until we do, we're not going to have a rational discussion. There are a number of people who think what's going to happen is the government is going to come to a point where it can't borrow, or can't borrow at any reasonable rate, and that will lead to it. But some kind of a crisis usually comes that then leads to a new era, and we're not at that crisis point yet, whatever it turns out to be.
David K. Johnston, like I said at the beginning, he's a real hero of mine. You should definitely read his books. They've had a real profound influence in the way that I think about what our government does and how it works. His latest, I think, is Free Lunch. Is that correct?
Yes. My next book, The Fine Print, will be out this summer.
Next book, Fine Print, will be out this summer. You should look for it then. David, thanks so much for joining us on The Breakdown. I hope I can get you back again soon.
I'm sure you can. Thank you, Chris.
The Breakdown is a weekly production of The Nation Magazine and TheNation.com. New audio casts are posted each Friday at TheNation.com and available in iTunes. The Breakdown was produced by Laura Stampler and yours truly. Senior producers of The Nation are Emily Douglas and Ben Wiskita. Comments and feedback should be sent to The Breakdown at TheNation.com.
Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Cinnamon, where you gonna run to? Where you gonna run to?